that new car smell. Well, maybe it's not so great after all. In fact, it could be downright bad for your health. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht, and I'll be right back to tell you why it stinks.
Privacy is under attack. When you give up data about yourself, you'll never get it back again. And once your privacy is gone, you'll find your freedoms will start to vanish too. So protect your rights, say no to surveillance, and keep your information to yourself. Privacy, it's worth hanging on to. This public service announcement is brought to you by StartPage.com, the private search engine alternative to Google, Yahoo, and Bing. Start over with StartPage.
There's nothing quite like that new car smell, but it turns out it's actually the smell of some very toxic chemicals. The 250 pounds of plastic, adhesive, and foam in every new car release toxic benzene, acetone, and formaldehyde. These chemicals can cause cancer and are linked to birth defects, impaired learning, and premature births. One recent study looked at the air inside of six new cars and found more than 20 times the safe amount of those chemicals. Fortunately, they decay at the rate of about 20% a week, reaching normal indoor air quality levels in about 6 months. So buy your next car used, or at least roll down the windows. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht. More news and information at CatherineAlbrecht.com.
Looking for some truth? You found it. LogosRadioNetwork.com.
Propaganda. Disinformation. Misinformation. Deception. Deceit. Spin. Untruths. Half-truths. Lies. You know the truth. Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia.
Welcome to Truth News Radio Australia. It's the 29th of March 2012 in Sydney, Australia. Welcome to listeners in the US and welcome to listeners in Australia. It's great to be speaking to you today. I've got another big show lined up. I've got an interview in about 30 minutes with Chris Emery, who's a producer of the amazing film A Noble Lie. And Chris is coming on to talk about that. And I believe James Lane, who also is a co-producer and did a lot of the work on the film, is also coming on. Now, the film A Noble Lie documents so many of the unexplained anomalies and evidence of government complicity in the Oklahoma bombing of 1995. It is a really important film and it's a really well-made film. So, I'm just really going to enjoy talking to Chris about it, and I have actually watched the film, so I've got a few thoughts on it of my own. Then in the second hour of the show, we have a guest, a very special guest coming on. His name is Craig Isherwood, and Craig is the secretary of the Citizens Electoral Council, which is a political party here in Australia. And the Citizens Electoral Council is one of the few political parties in Australia which really gets down to some of the core problems and core questions in our society about power, the banking system, the New World Order, the corruption within the central frameworks that run our world. There are no other political parties that really get down to that level. The Citizens Electoral Council gets a lot of their ideas from movements such as the Lyndon LaRouche movement. Now, there's a connection here, a direct connection here between Lyndon LaRouche and the Citizens Electoral Council, but they're not joined at the hip, as it were. You know, they are separate organisations. But Craig knows Lyndon LaRouche and borrows a lot of ideas from there. But at the same time, you know, he's his own person and they've got their own political party. And today, Craig is actually coming on to talk about his critique of the theory of evolution and Charles Darwin. And it's a really interesting discussion. We're going to take the whole second hour of the show to get into that. They put out a newsletter several months ago documenting what they call the humbuggery of Charles Darwin and the way in which the theories were connected to concepts which are, I guess, used by elitists, used by the ruling oligarchies to maintain their power and to essentially maintain the dominance of the control structures within our society. And he particularly refers to the ideas of Thomas Malthus, of course, who is continues to be a strong inspiration behind the environment movement. And Craig demonstrates that the strong connection there between Malthus and Darwin, and of course this was even acknowledged by Darwin, and of course Malthus brought in this idea of diminishing resources and the problems with population growth, which we now go by the term, you know, Malthusian population growth. So it's a really interesting investigation here, and this is not, I should point out, this is not a intelligent design, a creationist type argument. They do not refer to that, and that of course is a stereotyping of the arguments against Darwin, which is of course does exist, and there are many people who actually subscribe to that. But the arguments that are the most convincing are not the ones that need to rely on any kind of biblical or religious, you know, references or critiques. So I just really think that this is actually a very, very important topic. So I'd be interested in getting into that in some detail. Now, in the rest of the show, I've got some news coming up. We had a really important gathering in Sydney last week. And this was actually organised by a good friend of mine, John Bursell, who's a regular guest on this show. And it was a little gathering, we could call it a protest, but it was a small group. But I think we had about 50 people turn up at the event. And it was a protest against the looming threat of war against Iran. And, of course, it's sometimes hard for people to grasp it, sometimes hard for people to understand that there really is a threat of war. And in some descriptions and in some interpretations, you could say there is already a war against Iran, because we've got all of these things going on, including really biting sanctions, really crippling banking sanctions and threatening language, and, you know, actual plans to engage in military strikes against Iran. And, of course, largely it's Israel, but it's also the US, and they continually swap, and they continually sort of take turns between Israel and the US and swap, change their positions a little bit. Sometimes you'll see the position becomes ameliorated a little bit, you know, and it'll seem like, oh, they're backing off. They're not really going to attack Iran. Then it hypes up again. Then it backs off again. And, of course, this creates a total confusion in the mind of the general public. And, you know, I have to say, when I was speaking to people last week at our event, a lot of people would say, well, what do you mean war against Iran? There's no war against Iran. And, yes, you could argue that. It's a type of doublethink that's actually being practiced by the media, because basically they're just saying, well, there is no war, but, you know, the war's coming, but then the war is like next week, or is it next month, or is it next year? You never know. And then they always talk about it in terms of this being just a strategic sort of strike against certain facilities. But then you find out, well, Iran has all these facilities all over the place, and there'd be thousands of targets, you know, and there'd be probably just in the initial strikes, there'd be thousands of casualties. And of course, Iran says, well, that's an act of war. And then our media just keeps saying, well, you know, this is actually just going to be something to make the world safer. And then they use this concept of an act of war to make the world safer. Again, double think, confusing everyone's mind, turning everything, making black, white, making war, peace. And it is a blueprint from George Orwell of what is going on. So what I want to do now in the segment we've got here is to actually play a little bit from the speeches that were given at that event. And first up, I have John Bursell, who spoke at the event, and then I have actually myself. So I'll just kick those off right now, and then we'll move on with some more material.
Okay, welcome today to the rally called Say No War with Iran, Deflating the Hype with Truth Awareness. Today we're here at Town Hall, a small gathering of people, hopefully something bigger will emerge, to question the build-up and the hype in the media that could cause a war with Iran, a much greater conflict in the Middle East that possibly could lead to a third world war scenario, which would be terrible for everyone. First of all, you might want to know who I am. Well, my name is John Bursell. I'm a licensed aircraft maintenance engineer. I'm a delegate for the Australian Licensed Aircraft Engineers Association. I'm a truth and justice activist, and I've spent the last 5-6 years looking into the geopolitics of the Middle East and looking into the events of 9/11. 3 weeks ago, I penned an article about the Iranian situation and about the build-up in the hype in the media for another war in the Middle East. It was out of a couple of articles I read, one out of globalresearch.ca by Michelle Josadowski, also another article I read by Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, saying that it was very obvious now that we are moving to an Iranian conflict. The evidence is clear because it's exactly the same build-up we saw building up to the Iraq invasion in 2003, which is commemorated just a couple of days ago, the 9th anniversary since the American forces and the Coalition of the Willing went into Iraq. So today I'm just going to read briefly from parts of my essay that I wrote about this event, and hopefully I'll explain to you all why we have to stop the media spin, we have to stop our politicians beating the war drums, because if we go to a Iran conflict scenario, past this sanction scenario now, it really could lead to a third world war and something that will hurt all of us. The only people that will benefit from another war are people like Dick Cheney and Halliburton, the corporations that make the bombs, that do the repair after they destroy countries, the corporations that make money from oil and the price of oil going up. Everyone else is going to suffer. There's no benefit to invading a country like Iran other than to make money from the war that ensues and to control the oil reserves that country holds. So anyway, you know what made me act and how did I act? Well, I decided to try it Facebook. So I put up an event on Facebook and just saw how many people I could get together for an event without spending 1 cent. Just simply putting my energy into the event, making some signs, and just basically putting my energy and my thought behind creating the understanding that another war with Iran is possible and we must act now before it happens. Unfortunately, it now appears that a war between the US and its allies with Iran is imminent. By any military analyst's assessment, this has a real chance of changing the current multi-theater war against terrorism and so-called rogue terrorist states into a real World War III scenario. It's interesting to remember after 9/11 that the mainstream media did little to question the actual events and who benefited, but devoted massive media speculation to Iraq being involved with those events. In particular, they tried to say that Iraq and Saddam Hussein had harbored terrorists. They tried to say that he'd funded terrorists. This was all false. And then, of course, we know that to convince the UN, that to postulate and put forward the argument that Iraq held weapons of mass destruction, all lies, all false, all proven to be known lies at the time they were being told.
Aye.
They never bothered to look at the events of 9/11 and question who benefited from the events of 9/11 and possibly who made money directly from the events of 9/11. They failed to answer the victims' families' questions about 9/11, and they failed to investigate the events properly. Rather, they were immediately on a footing for war. Recently, Michelle Chosudowski and also Fernand Cunningham, in their recent article called War Plan Iran, said this: from the Western powers' point of view, Iran is both an elusive prize and a frustrating obstacle. Bringing Iran back into the orbit of the Western capitalist control has the added significance of depriving energy and other geopolitical advantages to rival powers, in particular Russia and China. Now, this is the difference with this Iranian conflict to Iraq. Iraq didn't have any allies left. Saddam had upset a lot of people in the area. He fought a war against Iran that was actually supported by the US on both sides. They put weapons and money into the hands of the Iranians and the Iraqis to keep the war going. But obviously Saddam didn't have many allies in the region. He was pretty well isolated, and his country had suffered many years of sanctions. But this war, we have a situation where Russia and China are directly affected by a war in Iran. They're directly affected by the sanctions, and they've been speaking very strongly.
We'll just leave it there because we're going to break in a moment. Now, I will continue to play some of that after the break. I'll actually play you a clip from my own words that I gave at that event. Really want to thank everyone who did turn up, because there were quite a few people listening to this show and quite a few people around the country who are very interested in this subject. Of course, there's not a lot of attention given to it. There's even the anti-war movement hasn't done anything yet, which is a really disturbing kind of situation, because the anti-war movement should be the people leading this. So anyway, more after the break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. See you shortly.
One is a serial hypocrite who lobbied for Freddie Mac before the housing crisis and for the individual mandate before Obamacare. Another, a counterfeit conservative who opposes right to work, massively increased spending, and funded Planned Parenthood. Finally, a flip-flopper who's been on all sides, supported TARP bailouts, and provided the blueprint for Obamacare. Three men, one vision, more big government, more mandates, less freedom. One man stands apart, ready to deliver real change, voting against every tax increase and every unbalanced budget every time. A real plan to cut $1 trillion year one and to balance the budget in three. Pro-life, pro-right to work, guided by faith and principle. Ron Paul, the one who will restore America now.
I'm Ron Paul, and I approve this message.
Are you being harassed by debt collectors with phone calls, letters, or even lawsuits? Stop debt collectors now with the Michael Maris Proven Method. Michael Maris has won 6 cases in federal court against debt collectors, and now you can win too. You'll get step-by-step instructions in plain English on how to win in court using federal civil rights statutes, what to do when contacted by phone, mail, or court summons, how to answer letters and phone calls, how to get debt collectors out of your credit report, how to turn the financial tables on them and make them pay you to go away. The Michael Maris Proven Method is the solution for how to stop debt collectors. Personal consultation is available as well. For more information, please visit ruleoflawradio.com and click on the blue Michael Maris banner, or email michaelmaris@yahoo.com. That's ruleoflawradio.com, or email michaelmiras@yahoo.com to learn how to stop debt collectors now.
Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. It's great to be talking to you today. Today we're bringing you some Australian news, and we have an interview coming up shortly with Chris Emery from the Noble Lie production team. Really interesting film about the Oklahoma bombing. Now, I'm just running through some audio that we captured from the protest that was held down in Sydney last weekend against the looming threat of war with Iran. And as I was mentioning there before the break, there's no other organization that's doing this. The Stop the War Coalition seems to have just dropped the ball on this one. Maybe they're going to, you know, kick in shortly. Maybe there's going to be something happening, but, you know, there hasn't. But I think that's also partly because of this confusion, as I was saying earlier, about people not really understanding whether there's war or not. And that's a psychological operation. That's kind of a softening up exercise, which works as much for the enemy as it does for us. And, you know, in some senses, we, the population, the taxpayers of these countries that are engaging in war, are kind of treated as the enemy too. I mean, the psychological operations are directed against us to facilitate the military strikes that they're planning to do. So that's why these types of events are incredibly important. And it's also incredibly important that we just keep repeating it. We have the repetition of propaganda ceaselessly from our you know, Orwellian media sources, from our giant corporate, mega corporate media sources that are either government or corporate, and it really doesn't make that much difference. We have a huge one in Australia called the ABC, which is the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, all funded by taxpayers. In the UK, of course, the BBC is funded by taxpayers. But then we've got these mega corporations like CNN. They all basically toe the same line anyway. So whether they're corporate or government actually doesn't make any difference. Anyway, I'm just going to continue from the speeches from last Saturday, and I'm just going to play you a bit from my own words that I had to say at that event. So I'll just kick off now.
Ladies and gentlemen, I just want to say thank you for coming today, because being here today is extremely important. Actually turning up at an event like this is essential to actually have an effect, to change the policies of our government, and also to help make other people aware. There's a lot of people passing by here today who may not understand these issues. This will be a pathway to help many more people wake up to the true situation. Because what I want to talk about a little bit is the way in which the true nature of the situation is completely masked and completely distorted by the way our media covers the issues that are central to the Iranian situation. And I want to actually cast back in history now. I want to go back 60 years, because if you go back 60 years in history, you will find that the situation we are now facing with sanctions and oil embargoes against Iran has all happened before. At the end of World War II, Iran was the country that had the biggest oil reserves that the British controlled in the world. There was a company called the Anglo-Iranian Oil Company. And the reserves of oil that Iran had were absolutely essential to the British situation and the British Empire and the whole power system, and has been continuously since then. But because of declassified documents that are now fully available and provide factual evidence of what occurred at that time, we can see that the governments of the UK and the United States lied and lied and lied again in order to have their way and maintain total control over the oil resources of Iran. And this was done just as it's being done now, through disinformation campaigns, through infiltration, through covert operations in Iran, and ultimately the overthrow of a very popular nationalist government, which was not Islamic. It was a nationalist government that was supported by the people. It was a democracy. But in 1951, they decided that they would nationalize their oil resources. And this was not to be tolerated by the Anglo-American Oil Company or the British or the Americans. And they immediately started putting sanctions against Iran, and they tried to control the situation by oil embargoes against Iran. And that is exactly what is happening right now. And it's a very interesting point to observe that Iran has begun trading oil in non-US currencies. They opened up their oil bourse about 4 or 5 years ago, and they are now trading in non-US currencies starting in March this year. The rhetoric and the hysteria about Iran has been building up, coincident with Iran's plans to start trading oil in non-US currencies. This is not a coincidence, ladies and gentlemen. This is because the economic power of the West is threatened by Iran being able to trade in non-American currency. They have the third largest oil reserves in the world. Now, let me just tell you what actually happened back in 1951. The diplomatic sanctions, the economic embargoes, didn't work. There was a disinformation campaign that tried to make out that the popular president was a bad person. There was all kinds of subversion of the government from within and the funding of opposition groups who were largely gangsters and mobsters and just rent a crowd and paid opposition. But it didn't work. So they moved to the next phase, which was destabilize and overthrow. And this was the first major covert operation that the CIA ever ran. This was the foundation of the CIA. And that tells you a lot about the whole history of what American foreign policy is, because the CIA and all of the other covert organizations that are part of the hidden power of the US and Anglo Empire operate this way. They engineered a coup. They funded the opposition parties and they supported the Shah, who was not powerful, who was largely defunct. They gave him money and influence, and they brought the Shah in to depose Mossadegh, the elected president. They then had charges trumped up against the elected president of Iran, which were false. And this is all declassified now. I'm not giving you a conspiracy theory. This is just information which you can glean on the internet very easily. It's in Wikipedia. They had the president arrested through a completely corrupt set of tricks that they did. But even that didn't work. He was such a popular leader that the people rose up and had the people arresting the president themselves arrested. And the coup failed. The next step was they started pouring more money in to fuel the pure gangsterism. We're talking about mafia types. We're just talking about a lot of money going in to destabilize. And it worked. In the end, it worked through pure force and pure betrayal and dirty tricks. The government was overthrown with violence, and Mossadegh himself was imprisoned for 3 years and then put under house arrest for the rest of his life. The Shah was put in power, a weak puppet dictator who was despised by the people right from the beginning. Because the Iranians were, you know, they had a nascent democracy. They had a nationalist movement. They knew what was going on. But the power and the influence of the Western Empire was so strong that the Shah was able to maintain a really corrupt and evil dictatorship for another 25 years until the Iranian Revolution finally got rid of the Shah. Now, is it surprising that the current Iranian government is not particularly friendly or well-disposed towards the English and the Americans? They had to struggle for most of the second half of the 20th century against this outrageous attempt to control them, all because of their oil reserves. And so we've seen now, in the last 10 years or so since 9/11, we've also seen an attempt on the part of the American, Anglo, and now EU empires to regain control of Iran. And it was announced, and John mentioned this in his speech, that after 9/11, top military commanders in the Pentagon were told, guess what? We're going into 5 different countries after we attack Afghanistan. We're going into Syria. We're going into Iran. We're going into North Korea. Now, look what's happening. The same plan that was laid out by the Project for the New American Century that was announced to top government and military people in the Pentagon after 9/11 is playing out. And we've seen the attempt to destabilize Syria.
Okay, we're just going to have to leave it there. Sorry, folks. Protest was extremely a great thing to be at. I really enjoyed it, and I hope that we see more of it. Coming after the break, Chris Emery and James Lane. See you then.
A Noble Lie, Oklahoma City, 1995, will change forever the way you look at the true nature of terrorism.
Based on the damage pattern to the building, what the government says is impossible.
The grand jury did not want to hear anything I had to say.
The decision was made not to pursue any more of those individuals.
Some of these columns were ripped up, shredded, tossed around.
The people that did the things they did knew doggone well what they were doing.
Expose the cover-up now at anoblelie.com.
HempUSA.org has a revolutionary wonder food for detoxing the body and rebuilding the immune system.
Microplant powder can help unclog arteries and soften heart valves while removing heavy metals, virus, fungus, bacteria, and parasites. Plus, it cleans and purifies the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. Keep your body clean with microplant powder. Visit us at HempUSA.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
It is so enlightening to listen to 90.1 FM, but finding things on the internet isn't so easy, and neither is finding like-minded people to share it with.
Oh, well, I guess you haven't heard of Brave New Books then.
Brave New Books?
Yes, Brave New Books has all the books and DVDs you're looking for by authors like Alex Jones, Ron Paul, and G. Edward Griffin. They even stock Interfood, Berkey products, and Calbin soaps.
There's no way a place like that exists.
Go check it out for yourself. It's downtown at 1904 Guadalupe Street, just south of UT.
Oh, by UT, there's never anywhere to park down there.
Actually, they now offer a free hour of parking for paying customers at the 500 MLK parking facility, just behind the bookstore.
It does exist. But when are they open?
Monday through Saturday, 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. and 1 to 6 p.m. on Sundays. So give them a call at 512-480-2503 or check out their events page at bravenewbookstore.com.
Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths, and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
I will not go down under the ground, 'cause somebody tells me that death's coming round. And I will not carry myself down to die. When I go to my grave, my head will be high. Let me die in my footsteps before I go down under the ground. There's been rumors of war and wars that have been. The meaning of life has been lost in the wind.
Hi, you're with Truth News Radio Australia. And welcome back. Well, today it's my great honor to have on the show Chris Emery and James Lane, who have produced this remarkable film that, as well as being a really well-made, professional-looking and sounding film, which is important and somewhat rare in the in these days of YouTube sort of homemade movies, it is also brimming with information. So, Chris, been a while since we've had a chat. Welcome back to Truth News Radio.
Thank you, Harewood. It's actually a pleasure to be back on. And I want to let you know, Holland Van den Neunhoff is here in studio with us in Oklahoma City. James wasn't able to make it. And I also want to give a shout out to John and all of the crew that did your rally in Sydney. I saw it on Facebook. It was outstanding. You did a beautiful job.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, mate. I mean, it was done on a shoestring, not a lot of promotion, but, you know, we just wanted to get the word out. And the point there is, you know, if citizens don't get together and just make a statement of any kind, it gives carte blanche to the powers that be, don't they? I mean, I think the powers that be just see the citizenry just basically, you know, hunkering down and doing whatever they're told. And they go, okay, well, there's no opposition here. You know, you can actually influence things to some extent. It's one of those things you've got to do it anyway. Like even if you're not having influence, you've still got to do it for your own sense of dignity. I mean, is that what you find too?
Well, Herodotus said that one of the worst curses of a man is to know much and have power to do nothing. And we knew a lot, and we decided to do something about it, and it has paid off. So, yes, you're right.
Yeah. Now, that's Holland, is it?
This is Holland van den Hoornhout, the writer for Noble Eye, yes.
Thank you so much for coming on today, Holland. Great to have you aboard. You wrote the script for the film, is that right?
Yes, along with collaboration with Dr. Wendy Painting and using the research of many other people in the field. Yes, I am the writer.
Great. Yeah, it's a really beautiful movie. Like, it flows well, it presents the information well, and, you know, I mean, you guys have really achieved a high level of production values there. You know, do you think that, I mean, I'm just really impressed, I just have to say, you know, because I see a lot of stuff that's done with good intentions, but it doesn't quite have that level of professionalism production. And that does make a difference, because when you're trying to get new people in and you want to send the DVD out, you know, tell your friends, tell people you don't know, if it has that level of professionalism, then they'll go, oh, yeah, this is a real movie. You know, this is a properly made movie. So, well, you know, thumbs up for that.
Well, it has to be packaged well. We realize that. And a lot of us were not professional filmmakers in the beginning. We acquired enough talent to present it in a professional manner, because it does matter. The packaging does matter in getting the message across and trying to impart to people the value of this information.
We've had excellent response, Herwood, from Australia and as well as Japan and 14 different countries in addition to the United States. So we were very humbled. We were very confident that the movie was good when it was released, but we had no idea was that the response we'd be getting. So we want to thank everybody out there that took the time to get online and purchase and attend our screenings. And, you know, having said that, we've got, four screenings set up here to go to in the next 5 weeks.
Oh, yeah.
So 4.5 weeks, actually.
That is great news. So you are traveling a bit at the moment. So you've got screenings across the U.S. Is that right?
Yes, we're going to Salt Lake City tomorrow for a screening in Salt Lake City with Jesse Trintidou, who is featured in the movie. Trintidou lost his brother. He was murdered by the FBI because they thought he was John Doe number 2. We expand at that at length in the movie. But we'll be having a screening tomorrow night in Salt Lake City at the Bruzy's movie pub. And Jesse Trintidou will be there showing his point of view, and it's going to be a good time.
That sounds really great. Do you have any plans for international screenings at the moment?
Not as of yet. We have submitted to international film festivals, and as we get accepted, we will be participating. But, you know, we really want to get this message out to the international audience, too, because this movie is not just about, you know, the Oklahoma City bombing and what happened in America. It's about the methodology that's being employed by governments. As they see it, it becomes more successful. You see more governments using this false flag methodology more and more because they see that it can be got away with. They can actually execute it and get their desired results.
Yeah, it's almost like a template, isn't it? And you sort of follow the template and you can even franchise it out. I mean, we've had in this country quite a number of similar type of frame-up kind of non-event false flags, which, you know, they don't tend to go to the final stage of actually blowing anything up. But that also is a type of template which I know that the FBI uses a lot. They groom people. They go out into the community. They find people who are mentally unstable, of which there are so many. There's just an endless supply of mentally unstable people, especially in the, you know, the immigrant communities, especially the, you know, people who've come here from a variety of backgrounds. A lot of them are mentally disturbed. A lot of them are heavily medicated. And, of course, you get people who've got some sort of psychosis who are also heavily medicated, and it's not that hard to kind of groom them into some ideas, because a lot of these people also have grudges against society. And, of course, this is what's going on. There's been a number of cases here in Australia where our federal police, which is a somewhat equivalent to the FBI in the US, have done this, and they, you know, they have these conversations, they have phone conversations. Sometimes people are convicted just on the basis of a series of phone calls. But of course, then that again, substantiates the government power and funding for other anti-terrorism procedures, and it's a type of false flag. But of course, what we saw with Oklahoma again is a much darker and more evil and catastrophic type of event, which you don't tend to see that often. And your film is just so bursting with facts and information. I'm honestly going to have to watch it again. I actually wanted to watch it again last night, but I just didn't get time because I wanted to go through some of those facts that you've highlighted to try and sort of pick out what are the key ones. But I just know that some of the things that people are most interested to know whenever you bring this up is they want to know, was Timothy McVeigh guilty? Was he a bad person? Was he in on it? Or was he a total patsy and framed up? Another question, people want to know was it intentional to blow this building up? Or was it just something that was a training exercise gone wrong through incompetence or whatever that led to maybe something that was meant to be a benign false flag becoming a real terrorist attack? I don't know if you want to comment on any of those, that'd be great.
Go ahead.
Well, there is no question that Tim McVeigh was definitely involved in the bombing. We're not arguing that Tim McVeigh was innocent at all. He was a player, but he was not the mastermind by any means. I've interviewed people who knew McVeigh, people who served in the first Gulf War with McVeigh, people who were on the tank with McVeigh in the Gulf War, people who lived with him for 2 years. And the consensus on McVeigh was that he was a dedicated follower, incapable of independent action, but if you gave him an order, he'd follow through to completion no matter what. In fact, one quote from one of his barracks mates was, if you told McVeigh to spit shine a cinder block, he would sit there and do it until it was done. But don't expect him to come up with anything on his own. He was not a leader. He was following orders. They have pinned the bombing on him because it is politically expedient. Now, the question is, was it intentional? Was it a mistake? Was it a sting gone bad? Well, frankly, the evidence points to the fact that the official story is false from top to bottom. The government knew that Tim McVeigh was going to bomb that building on April 19th, 1995. He wasn't stopped. Now, was that intentional? Was that a screw-up? The evidence points to the fact that there was a concurrent law enforcement operation underway to implicate members of the radical right, the so-called radical right here in this country, in the bombing. And it did not come through. They pinned it on McVeigh. Right. I do think that it was an intentional act by certain elements, but it was executed under the guise of this sting operation that went awry. And that is the convenient hangout, the limited hangout they offer up, is that, it was just a sting operation that went bad. Well, if so, people need to pay for that. No one has paid for that. So we can only guarantee and we can only assume that because the cause is contrived, the end result is the motive.
Okay, yeah, you have to infer motive from a number of, you've sort of got to triangulate to try and get the motive. And, I know that you've uncovered some information which can go towards motive. For example, the ongoing Whitewater investigations and some cocaine trafficking and potentially laundered money that was being stored in those buildings?
Yes. We interviewed Craig Roberts. He was a Tulsa police officer who's actually retained by the FBI in the aftermath of the bombing to assist in their investigation because they relied on his expertise. He quit the case after he realized the FBI was lying to him, but he received a call from a federal agent who told him that the records related to the drug-running scandal out of MENA, Arkansas, while Bill Clinton was governor, or related to Whitewater, all those records were moved to the Murrah building.
Just hold that, Holland. We're just going to break. I want to get back into that straight after the break. Thanks. With Truth News Radio Australia.
The Oklahoma City bombing. Top 10 reasons to question the official story. Reason number 2, why was the ATF AWOL? Paramedic Tiffany Bible, who was on the scene within 5 minutes, has stated in an affidavit that agents of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms told her that they were not in their office that morning. EMT Catherine Mallett also overheard one agent say to another, quote, is that why we got the page to not come in today, end quote. Bruce Shaw, as interviewed on KFOR-TV, was also told by ATF agents that they had been paged to not come into work. The ATF initially denied these claims and now variously claim that one of their agents was in a free-falling elevator, which has been disproven, or that they had been in an all-night stakeout, or that they had been at a golf tournament. As they try to sort out their lies, all we want to know is, did the ATF receive a warning? And if so, why did they not pass it on to others in the Norvell? For more information, go to OKCBombingTruth.com.
Are you the plaintiff or defendant in a lawsuit? Win your case without an attorney with JurisDictionary, the affordable, easy-to-understand 4-CD course that will show you how in 24 hours, step-by-step. If you have a lawyer, know what your lawyer should be doing. If you don't have a lawyer, know what you should do for yourself. Thousands have won with our step-by-step course, and now you can too. JurisDictionary was created by a licensed attorney with 22 years of case-winning experience. Even if you're not in a lawsuit, you can learn what everyone should understand about the principles and practices that control our American courts. You'll receive our audio classroom, video seminar, tutorials, forms for civil cases, pro se tactics, and much more. Please visit ruleoflawradio.com and click on the banner or call toll-free 866-LAW-EASY.
Hi, you're with Truth News Radio Australia. Welcome back. Today I'm interviewing Chris Emery and Holland van den Nieuwenhof, who are the co-creators of The Noble Lie, the film which gets into the Oklahoma bombing and really just tears apart the official story, gives you so much information that I think you probably need to watch the film two or three times even just to absorb the information that they bring. Now, Holland, you were just going through some points there about motive. If you can pick up where you left off, that was extremely interesting what you were saying there before the break.
Well, when we look at a cause and we see that the cause is contrived, we can only assume that the effect is the motive. And what the effect after the Oklahoma City bombing was, several things. One was the demonization of dissent in this country. In the early 1990s in the United States, when I became politically aware, was that there was a very large grassroots movement against the encroachments of the federal government against the Constitution. There, people were upset about what was happening. After the bombing, dissent against federal encroachment became akin to baby killing because of the dead children in the daycare center. You also saw the passage of the Anti-Terrorist Act, which was kind of like the 1995 version of the Patriot Act, which had failed in Congress before, but after the bombing sailed through with flying colors. You saw the eradication of all the documents related to the MENA Arkansas drug running ring that was going on when Bill Clinton was governor of Arkansas in relation to Iran-Contra, when drugs were being flown into MENA, Arkansas, weapons flown out to Central America. All those records which were being investigated were moved to the Murrah building when the Clintons went to D.C. to assume the presidency. All those records disappeared because, like I said before, we interviewed Craig Roberts, a police officer on the scene. And he was receiving calls. He was investigating the case, and he was receiving calls from federal agents in Arkansas who were telling him that the records from Whitewater had been moved to the Murrah building. And then we interviewed Don Browning, an Oklahoma City police officer, who testifies to the fact that they held back the rescue efforts to retrieve documents. In fact, they were held back at gunpoint, threatened with arrest, if they went into the building. They were told that there were records so crucial to the government inside the building that until they were recovered, no further rescue of people would be made. This is while people were bleeding to death inside the building. So they were very concerned about these records. So the primary motive, I don't know. But what you see is all of these eggs in one basket they try to wrap up. And we can see that the American people did not benefit. The terrorists or whoever they were did not benefit. The only beneficiary of this attack was the United States federal government.
Yeah, and it's still, you know, really hard to comprehend the premeditated killing of something like 80 children. How many children were in that daycare center that were killed?
20, I believe,
yeah.
Right, Chris?
19, and then there were some that, a couple that died unborn. Of their injuries later. Yeah, and unborns, yeah, the three extras, so.
Yeah, well, you know, look at it this way, man. I mean, the CIA, our covert intelligence agencies and their compadres have inflicted massive harm upon foreign countries for generations, for decades, yeah. With applause. Now, they suffered no reprobate for that, for those actions, which they know killed innocent people to serve national interest. Why would they hesitate to bring that same agenda home to execute a political agenda? It worked abroad. They suffered no accountability. Why would they not bring it home?
Yeah, it's the same MO. It's really just the same MO. It's just it's a little more shocking when it happens, in your own city, in your own country. But yeah, we should be expecting it when we see it happening overseas. And you know, when we see predator drones just taking out villages randomly around Pakistan, mm-hmm. you know, we should realize well that could happen here, because you know, if they're going to do it there, well, they could do it here too, maybe not just yet. But the Predator drones, I don't know if you've heard much about the news about this, but the US is actually launching a drone base off the coast of Western Australia now, or the Cocos Islands, I believe it is. Mm-hmm. And the Australian government is going to be mm-hmm. strongly supporting that. Both political parties here have said, you know, thumbs up, good on you. So the Americans will have their drones, and they're not calling them predator drones, they're calling them surveillance drones. But I think that is a so I'm getting a bit off topic here, but it's something that was in the news yesterday. But it's just incredible how we accept it, and we do accept when they do that, and then when, of course, they kill innocent people, we just say, oh, that was collateral damage. But look, back to the Oklahoma bombing. So we have this evidence of motive. Another really important point in the research that you've dug up is that the Ryder truck and the explosion from the Ryder truck does not appear to have been responsible for all the damage we saw in the building. And if you could just run through some of the key points in that information, that would be great.
Well, the official story of the Oklahoma City bombing is that Tim McVeigh alone drove up a Ryder truck packed with ammonium nitrate and fuel oil and detonated outside the federal building in Oklahoma City, resulting in the deaths of 168 people. That is the official story. The problem is that the crater in the street is offset from the major damage to the building. The entire front of the building was demolished, but there was a major bite on the northeast side that went all the way through to the other side. In fact, at its deepest point, it was 18 inches away from the other side. This is drastically offset from the crater in the street. And mind you, it's not a very large crater. It's at the most 17, 18 feet wide. Although they exaggerate it in the official reports by a factor of 2, we demonstrate in a noble lie that it was no more than 18 feet long, based upon photographic and eyewitness evidence. This crater is offset from the major damage. We interviewed General Benton K. Parton, head of U.S. Air Force Weapons Development, for most of his career. He spent his career blowing things up for the military and conducting bomb damage analysis. He analyzed the damage at the Murrah Building and concluded that there were at least 4 interior charges placed at key supporting columns, that the exterior truck bomb was not the major cause of destruction to the Murrah Building.
Okay, so but the truck bomb did go off, and it provides a convenient way of pinning the crime on the patsy who's been set up to take the rap, right? So this again is the template that they're operating from. And if I can just relate it to something almost identical to that was done in our part of the world, in Bali in 2002, we had a scenario where there was an explosion that took place, and there was people who took the rap for it. They pleaded guilty, and there was a van that had explosives in it. But then the damage that was done in the full explosion that blew up the Sari Club in Kuta Bali was way beyond what these patsies even had the competence or technology to do, because of the basically a homemade fertilizer bomb in a van. And, you know, these buildings had the concrete ripped off the rebar, you know, just massive blast wave with huge overpressure. And it seems like what we see there in Oklahoma is, again, a massive explosion with huge pressures that, well, if it was the truck, of course, it would have been symmetrical in all directions, and it wasn't. And as you say, there was all this evidence of other damage. But of course, it was very convenient for the criminal investigation to be able to just say, well, it was the truck, and we've got the guilty party here, and lock it up.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, Harwood. And I urge all your Australian listeners to look up the Sydney Hilton bombing in Australia in the mid-1970s as an example in your country of a false flag bombing. Apparently, the Australian anti-terrorist branch was facing a lack of funding and decided to blow up a simple bomb outside a conference of international VIPs. Something went wrong, and a couple of trash men and a couple of guards died. But that is almost as easily demonstrable as the Oklahoma City bombing as a false flag attack. No security procedures were followed. No investigation was followed. They pinned it on a couple of patsies to fulfill a political agenda. This is a tried and true formula. The false flag attack is almost boring in its use to initiate these types of agendas. It is the go-to formula for the controlling elites to manipulate public opinion. So I urge all of the Australian listeners to look up the Sydney Hilton bombing. Honestly, I actually studied that case for the Oklahoma City bombing, and I wanted to include it in the movie. We simply didn't have time because that case is so demonstrable of a security intelligence service executing a terrorist attack to fulfill its own political agenda.
And then, of course, we have the Port Arthur case, and that is something that we even have more than a tacit interest in. That we'd love to take on the challenge of doing a movie on the Port Arthur case. It's just horrendously, completely over the top. So, and you and I have talked about that several times when I was in Sydney. So that's wide open. Nobody's even touched that. So,
yeah, no, look, if you guys want to do a film on that, you know, you'll get a lot of support, and I'll give you 150% support from my end. It's one of those really touchy subjects, of course,
and
people don't want the subject brought up. You have a lot of resistance. Of course, when Martin Bryant allegedly killed those 35 people in Port Arthur in Tasmania, that was the record for the number of deaths from a single gunman in any kind of peacetime event until that was then exceeded allegedly by Anders Breivik in Norway. And again, that's another one that just is begging for someone to investigate, because quite frankly, I don't buy Anders Breivik killing 70-odd people on his own. I just don't buy it either. It's just on technical terms. I don't think it's really conceivable.
Well, when you see the success of the false flag formula demonstrated and you see governments replicating it, you see a dangerous trend. I mean, here in Ohio just last year when the protests were going on against the governor, when he was clamping down on the unions, a politician actually forwarded a memo advocating the use of a false flag attack to demonize the union members who were protesting the governor's policies, to simulate a personal gunman attack on the governor, to demonize dissent. This was a memo that was passed among office holders. So the formula has demonstrated its usefulness, and they are replicating it, and that's very dangerous. But for all our listeners who are listening now, I urge you to go to anoblelie.com, anoblelie.com. You can see the trailer and see what we're talking about.
And we do appreciate your support out there. Overseas has been absolutely outstanding. Thank you very much for having us on your show.
Awesome, yeah. And look, we want to organize a screening here in Sydney. I mean, you know, we do some grassroots screenings in halls and stuff. I'd really like to get your show in a proper cinema for, a premiere, just give it...
Well, I plan on being over there in March for the centenary in Canberra, so maybe we can work something out.
And I've been to Australia myself before, and I'd love to return.
Yeah, great. Well, I hope you guys can make it out here, and I hope everyone. Just check out that website. Just put a Noble Lie into Google and try and get the DVD. Thanks, and we'll be talking to you again hopefully soon.
Thank you. Have a good evening, Harwood.
Would you like to make more definite progress in your walk with God? Bibles for America is offering a free study Bible and a set of free Christian books that can really help. The New Testament Recovery Version is one of the most comprehensive study Bibles available today. It's an accurate translation, and it contains thousands of footnotes that will help you to know God and to know the meaning of life. The free books are a three-volume set called Basic Elements of the Christian Life. Chapter by chapter, Basic Elements of the Christian Life clearly presents God's plan of salvation, growing in Christ, and how to build up the church. To order your free New Testament Recovery Version and Basic Elements of the Christian Life, call Bibles for America toll-free at 888-551-0102. That's 888-551-0102. Or visit us online at bfa.org.
Hold it right there, bucko. That photo was poorly lit, and your composition is all wrong. Those could be the last words you hear before police confiscate your camera. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht, and I'll be back with the scoop.
Privacy is under attack. When you give up data about yourself, you'll never get it back again. And once your privacy is gone, you'll find your freedoms will start to vanish too. So protect your rights, say no to surveillance, and keep your information to yourself. Privacy, it's worth hanging on to. This public service announcement is brought to you by StartPage.com, the private search engine alternative to Google, Yahoo, and Bing. Start over with StartPage.
Police are detaining people for taking perfectly legal pictures. They've apparently become art critics with instructions to determine whether people's photos have, quote, apparent aesthetic value. The idea is to stop terrorists, though what a terrorist could do armed with just a camera is beyond me. One innocent photographer got stopped for taking pictures of a refinery in Long Beach, California. Another got a full pat-down for filming the outside of the courthouse. In addition to judging people's photos, cops are harassing anyone with a camera who doesn't look like, quote, a regular tourist. So next time you visit Long Beach, wear a big Hawaiian shirt and make sure your photos are gorgeous. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht. More news and information at CatherineAlbrecht.com. Could printed books soon be a thing of the past? Apparently, a lot of kids these days are exchanging book pages for web pages. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht, and I'll be back to tell you what's happening to literacy.
Privacy is under attack. When you give up data about yourself, you'll never get it back again. And once your privacy is gone, you'll find your freedoms will start to vanish too. So protect your rights, say no to surveillance, and keep your information to yourself. Privacy, it's worth hanging on to. This public service announcement is brought to you by StartPage.com, the private search engine alternative to Google, Yahoo, and Bing. Start over with StartPage.
Forget books and magazines. A recent study by the UK's National Literacy Trust found that text messages are the number one reading material for kids today, and numbers 2 and 3 are email and Facebook. That's not surprising, since cell phones and computers outnumber novels in most homes. We adults are obviously not setting a very good example. Of course, text messages are not known for their literary quality or for their outstanding spelling and grammar. In fact, they're some of the worst writing around. So if you want your kids to develop basic English skills, tell them to unplug from Facebook and turn off Twitter, then hand them an old-fashioned book. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht. More news and information at CatherineAlbrecht.com.
You're listening to the Logos Radio Network at LogosRadioNetwork.com.
Sick of the lies, deception, spin, and half-truths? Well, so are we. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. Tune in every week at truthnews.com.au or subscribe to the podcast with iTunes or your favorite podcatcher.
Welcome back to Truth News Radio Australia for the second hour of the show. It's great to have your company tonight. It's been really great getting some feedback and getting people fresh on the air. Doing a live show is just so much more invigorating. I'm really enjoying it. And in the second hour, I have the whole hour dedicated to a very important guest from the Citizens Electoral Council, Craig Isherwood. Craig, welcome to Truth News Radio.
Yeah, thanks, Harrowitt. It's good to be on.
Yeah, it's really great to have you on the show. Now, Craig, your political organisation is one that is actually quite successful in Australia, and you've got a lot of, you know, a lot of activity, and you're very well organised, and you've got this great newsletter that comes out every month. But of course, you are, from the point of view of the mainstream and the whether it's left or right, of course, pigeonholed as being some kind of like fringe extremist type group. And, you know, before we get into the subject of this interview, which I really want to get in depth with your critique of Darwinian evolution, I thought we might just touch on some of the news that came out last week, which I think your organization was roped in to this media scandal over Clive Palmer talking about the Rockefellers and the CIA potentially having funding or influence over the Greens and Greenpeace.
Yeah, that's right, Harrowitt. Look, whenever there's a controversy come up like what Clive Palmer did, the messages delivered by the major media through the reference to Lyndon LaRouche. Now, back in the early 90s, I was responsible for, you know, getting to know Mr. Lyndon LaRouche, who's a very famous character in the United States, a presidential candidate for many different presidential elections. But his ideas, in particular, oppose the policies of globalization of British free trade, and I say that in the classic sense of British free trade, because it's the British that established free trade, which I'll talk about more when we talk about Charles Darwin. Yeah. But the message to be delivered to political figures or whatever is, if you speak out, we're going to give you the LaRouche treatment. In other words, you're going to get basically slandered and then ignored. And that's basically the history of our organisation, is that whenever the people come out saying something that might be a bit offensive. Now, in this particular case, Clive Palmer said that the CIA funds the Greens. And then all of a sudden, this is LaRouche saying this. We never said that. In fact, we've never said that about the CIA and the Rockefellers. We said many things about the Rockefellers in particular, how they're assets of the British Crown, how they were created by the British Crown. But what we've been very specific about and very detailed about, Harrowitt, is how Prince Philip, as the representative of the Crown, established the Green Movement in Australia personally, how he personally established the Australian Conservation Foundation. And what you had is the establishment, particularly the Rupert Murdoch establishment, the Crown's own press baron, coming out and attacking Clive Palmer on the issue of CIA and the Rockefellers. In other words, he was defending the Greens. So there's a real irony that LaRouche, who we're associated with, our organisation has published a lot of material about how the Crown has been established the Greens right throughout the history of the Greens in this country, and yet he comes out smashing, Rupert Murdoch comes out trying to smash Clive Palmer with these slanders.
Yeah, and I should just point out for our listeners, Clive Palmer is a mining magnate, one of the richest men in Australia. I think he's worth about $5 billion. So his press statements, you know, they carry a bit of weight. They tend to have to, you know, play them when he says stuff. But, of course, this statements that Clive Palmer made just had all these repercussions in the media straight away.
Yeah.
Continue.
I was just going to say, that's the whole idea. The inference is Clive Palmer is associated with LaRouche, LaRouche is associated with the CEC, therefore Clive Palmer is associated with the CEC, and the CEC says all these outrageous things about the Crown, about the so-called the Rockefeller. Look, it was just a straight lie. It was designed as more of a Clive Palmer pull-your-head-in type attack on him. And look, right. we have nothing to do with Clive Palmer whatsoever.
Yeah, you're just being used as a gratuitous sort of punching bag, or you know, something to be associated with something that's negative to make people think it's worse. And it happens a lot. It happens with a lot of different any organization or any people that are going way from the established spectrum of what is considered to be acceptable discussion, then all get grouped together with what they call the fringe extremists. And so you're probably a Holocaust denier and a whole bunch of other things.
And I'd also say, Harold, this came in the context of a Queensland state election, where Queensland, of course, is one of our states. And you saw the Labor Party reduced from, was it about 48 seats down to 7 or 8? I mean, this is the biggest loss by a political party. And some of the policies that were hated within Queensland were actually green policies. Like, for example, building a wilderness corridor from Birdsville, which is almost towards the centre of Australia, all the way to the coast, where you protect so-called endangered species. But their intention is also to pass laws to shut down viable agricultural land. So this was a hated policy.
Right. Yeah, so
there's a very, very heated discussion take place. And, of course, Clive Palmer wants to develop mining in that state too.
Of course, yeah. And, you know, this idea of shutting agricultural land down to save the planet, of course, that's happening all across the country. And it is extremely worrying for our future when you know, agricultural land is what we've got. You know, that's what we've got to feed our people, especially in the event of maybe some international crisis, you know, trade problems or whatever. It's really important to maintain that. But, you know, that again comes under this rubric of the environment. And then, of course, the idea of population control comes under this same rubric. And if you complain about it, well, they're basically going to say, well, you know, there's too many people in Australia. But then, of course, the government's bringing in 200,000 a year immigrants, while at the same time paying lip service to this environmental movement that says there's too many people. We're just our head is spinning with all this wild, bizarre, you know, propaganda.
Well, this has come from the establishment of the environmentalist movement as a direct extension of the eugenics movement out of England, out of the British Empire, actually. And this is why it's important to talk about Charles Darwin, Harold, because Charles Darwin wasn't a person. He wasn't really a scientist. He was a project. And a lot of his material that is presented as his material, in fact, was plagiarized from earlier people like, for example, Thomas Malthus, and also people like Herbert Spencer, Galton, a guy named Francis Galton, and so on and so forth. But these people specifically had a policy of eugenics. Is that in that there's certain races of people, and they say the white race, and particularly the British race, are more suited for governing over other races than anywhere else. Now, Charles Darwin was a big believer of this because he was a follower of a guy by the name of Thomas Malthus. And a lot of what people hear about the survival of the fittest, the natural selection as a method of evolution, is simply propaganda, because the intention of Charles Darwin, or rather the runners, the people that were promoting Charles Darwin, for example, a guy by the name of Thomas Huxley, who was a privy councillor of the British Crown, was to smash the optimism, Harold, of what Benjamin Franklin represented with the birth of the American Republic. And see, just to put this into a framework that people understand, is that you have two views of mankind on the face of the planet today. You have what's called the oligarchical view, or the oligarchical principle, where basically human beings are no different than animals. And there's a certain elite, like, for example, the gods of Olympus, Zeus and so forth, that have the right to rule over the rest of mankind. Now, that's extended to the idea of the British Empire today, that has a right to rule over mankind, and the eugenics movement specifically spells out that it's the white race, it's the British race, that has the most superior genes to rule over the rest of the world. There's another view of mankind, though, which is what Benjamin Franklin represented, and it's not the oligarchical view, that human beings are a fundamentally different species than animals. Whilst we have animal-like traits, we also have this power of what we call, in our organization, creativity. We have the ability to make discoveries of those unseen physical principles on how the universe works, understand those principles through experiment and through paradoxes in experiments, and take those principles and incorporate them through science and technology into the processes that we use to create the goods in particular that we need to survive. So what this does is it creates the ability for human beings to support more and more people. And we're not locked into overpopulation parameters like, for example, if you have too many rabbits existing in one paddock, food runs out, the rabbits begin to die off. Or in the case here in Australia, you have Lake Eyre at the moment. It's been full of water for the last 3 years. The pelican populations have exploded. And now as Lake Eyre dries up, all those pelicans die out because the fish stocks die down. Mankind, through modern agriculture and the development of soils, technological machinery, plant breeding facilities, and also transforming the deserts, as has been done in many parts of the world, we can actually increase the amount of food that we grow to continue to grow the population. And today, we are not even touching about 1% of the capacity that we have to grow food. And the argument that the world is overpopulated is purely a political one. It's one that comes from the idea that if you were to have an educated citizenry, which is what Franklin Roosevelt and the American Republic represented, that could govern itself and promote this idea of the development of science and technology, then you have no need of an oligarchy. You have no need for the British Empire, and right. You have no need for empires whatsoever.
Great. So this is where Charles... Break. We're going to be going to break shortly.
Yes.
I think you've really important point there, the oligarchical principle, which is that we are essentially animals to be managed, is somewhat essential to this and somewhat central to the humbuggery of Charles Darwin, as you put it. So we'll be back after the break with Truth News Radio Australia talking about the humbuggery of Charles Darwin. Be right back.
Capital Coin and Bullion is a family-owned business built on the promise to bring you affordable pricing on all coin and bullion products. In addition to coins and bullion, we now offer storable freeze-dried foods produced by Augustin Farms, ammunition at 10% above wholesale prices, Berkey water products, gift certificates, and our silver pool, a new way to guarantee silver by prepaying at a locked price. We can even help you set up a metals IRA account. Call us at 512-646-6440 for more details. As always, we buy, sell, and trade precious metals, give appraisals, and cater to those with all sizes of coin collections. We're located at 7304 Burnett Road, Suite A, about a half a mile north of Koenig, next to the Ikebon Sushi and Genie Car Wash. We're open Monday through Friday, 10 to 6, Saturdays, 10 to 2. Visit us at capitalcoinandbullion.com or call 512-646-6440 and say you heard about us on Rule of Law Radio or Texas Liberty Radio.
What's been the problem with phone companies? High prices and contracts that lock you in for 2 years minimum. Not FreedomTelephones.com. Freedom Telephones are designed around the concept and reality of patriotism, loyalty, and privacy. With FreedomTelephones.com, there are no contracts, no credit checks, and no social security numbers required. That's why our name is FreedomTelephones.com. Finally, residential, mobile, and business telephones and plans that are private and never lock you into a long-term contract. Want a low price? Residential and business plans start at only $14.99, and mobile plans start at just $39.99. Plus, every month you pay your bill, FreedomTelephones.com contributes to your favorite programs. Don't wait. Support the cause and get the highest quality and the lowest prices by calling 1-800-600-5553. That's 800-600-5553. FreedomTelephones.com. Portable. Private. Perfect.
Young, the odds are there to be
we're back. And today I have Craig Isherwood from Citizens Electoral Council. Craig has been going through incredible, you know, detail and really fascinatingly the humbuggery of Charles Darwin. There is an article of that title which was published on the Citizens Electoral Council website, and you can find that. What is the website they can look up on Google to find this, Craig?
Well, it's www.cecaust.com.au, and okay. The New Citizen is the name of the paper, Herald.
Okay, The New Citizen, and you put that out, what, roughly once a month?
Well, this particular one's a special report, but we do put a number of the New Citizens out as we have need to. We'll be putting another one out just after Easter.
Great, great. Now, before the break there, so we're talking about this oligarchical principle where human beings are kind of like cattle and have to be managed. But, of course, the oligarchs themselves don't consider themselves to be cattle. So they consider themselves to be fundamentally superior to the rest of us. Is that the way you interpret this concept? I mean, do they see themselves as being somehow fundamentally different to us?
Well, that's exactly the whole purpose of the concept of eugenics, Herewood, which is what actually Charles Darwin believed. Eugenics means well born, and that means you've got good genetics, you're more intelligent, and you're capable, you're able to rule over the human race because everyone else is inferior to you. Okay. Now, this was a doctrine brought forward as a political doctrine by people like Thomas Malthus, who was actually employed by the British East India Company, which was the precursor to the British Empire. Now, Thomas Malthus wrote specifically against the development of the population because the population represented an educated population represented a threat to the British Empire, as was being seen in the American Republic under Benjamin Franklin. A lot of what Darwin wrote was actually taken directly from Thomas Malthus. And for example, if you just go to his book in 1859 on the origin of the species by means of natural selection, or the preservation of favoured races in the struggle of life. That's another interesting thing. A lot of Darwin's books, you never get to hear the full title. They sort of always leave half the title off because they are really racist, you might say, in the way that they're presented. But look, he says, quote...
Can you read the title of that again? Sorry, could you just repeat the title of that one?
The Origin of the Species by Means of Natural Selection... or the preservation of favoured races in the struggle for life.
Now, that was the title of the book when it was first published. Is that correct?
Yes. I mean, this is Darwin's. Yeah. So that's his first. And this is what he says, and I quote: "The struggle for existence among all organic beings throughout the world inevitably follows from their high geometrical powers of increase. This is the doctrine of Malthus applied to the whole animal and vegetable kingdoms." And basically he then goes through praising Malthus's theory. And Malthus's theory was very simple. He said that human populations increase geometrically, but the food supply only increases arithmetically. So in one case you have 1, 2, 4, 16, and so on and so forth, very fast. And then you have 1, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12. So it's saying that the rate of human population expansion is so much greater than the rate at which we can produce food. But that simply is not true. I mean, yes. here in Australia, for example, you have 1,500 farmers producing rice, or they used to before the Murray-Darling Basin. A food bowl was shut down. 1,500 farmers could create enough food to feed 30 million people. And that's only in one small pocket of Australia. Because human beings are not animals, we have this ability to transform the environment through technology, unlike any other animal. Every other animal is constrained by the environment, while mankind isn't. So Darwin was used as a tool to stop the optimism that came from this idea that human beings are not animals. And again, you had this this policy of eugenics, which he promoted. Now, Darwin himself didn't promote himself. He was promoted by, as I said before, a bloke by the name of Thomas Huxley, who was a privy councillor who went around all the different parts of England and some parts of Europe, literally preaching Darwin's theories. I mean, Darwin was a bit of a hypochondriac, actually. He didn't go out very much at all. Right. But this was a project, right? Thomas Huxley was the grandfather of Julian Huxley. Julian Huxley, Prince Philip, and Prince Bernard of the Netherlands established in 1961 the World Wildlife Fund, right? And okay. the reason this became the premier global institution for the spread of environmentalism, and just as an understanding of why environmentalism, well, the practice of eugenics became very, very unpopular under Adolf Hitler because, as we know, he deliberately set out a eugenics policy of getting rid of the Jews, the Christians, the trade unionists, and anyone else that he considered politically a threat or inferior. So eugenics, as it was being practiced in the 40s, particularly the late 30s and the 40s, became a very unpopular mode of operation. So it then transformed into the same policies of population reduction, of getting rid of undesired peoples, was transformed into environmentalism, where today, you know, Prince Philip himself has come out and said the world is overpopulated. We have to reduce the world's population from 7 billion down to below 2 billion. And there's other people employed by the British Crown, particularly people like Hans Schellenhuber, who've come out. They've been in Australia recently saying that, oh, no, we've got to reduce the population down to below 1 billion people.
Okay.
What they're talking about is basically removing the support for science and technology, removing the support for food production, like with farmers. And can you imagine getting rid of 6 billion people on the face of this planet? What would have to be done?
It's staggering, isn't it?
And this is what these people are talking about. So when you're talking about the oligarchical principle, what you're talking about is reduction of the human race on those proportions, which is really very, very frightening. That brings us, of course, Harrowood, I mean, we are familiar with the moves at the present time of trying to get a war started against Iran and Syria. And our concern is that what you have had in the last 60 to 70 years is the fact that the British, what we call a British monetarist system, we've had a monetary system that has been designed to concentrate the wealth in the hands of what is called the British Crown. And this is in their minions at the present time is Wall Street and of course, City of London. Now, that monetary system is in the process of disintegration because it's based upon usury, it's based upon debt, it's based upon speculation. Now, this is what you see in Greece. The fact that Greece is so indebted, the austerity measures is going to kill the population. It's going to reduce the population. So here we have the City of London, which is, of course, the British Crown again, British Empire, to be wider, employing economic policies that are going to have the consequences of reducing the population. However, places like Russia under President Putin or President-elect Putin and China and even India, they have a different view of their populations and are actually making policy decisions to protect and to develop their populations, including developing science and technology so they can go to the moon and to Mars and so forth, whereby the discovery of the principles necessary to do that can then be applied in the domestic economies to, you know, again, as I said, increase the ability to produce things. So what you've got now is a British system of monetarism in Europe in the transatlantic period is in a process of disintegration, but you have Russia, China, and India developing their economy. So you're seeing a shift, actually, of power in the world. And the reason that there's a big push now to get a war going either via Syria or Iran through preemptive strike on Iran's nuclear facilities is that the British don't care. The British oligarchy do not care if they wipe out the entire human race based upon thermonuclear exchanges. Because unfortunately the world's got to the point today that we aren't going to be in a position of stopping any other sort of war. If Russia gets involved because it's got a partnership with Iran, then what you're going to see is this thing accelerate to thermonuclear war.
And consequently, Craig, sorry to interrupt, I want to get back into those points. I also want to get back into some points about evolution. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be right back after the break.
This is Building 7, a 47-story skyscraper that fell on the afternoon of September 11th.
The government says that fire brought it down. However, 1,500 architects and engineers concluded it was a controlled demolition.
Over 6,000 of my fellow service members have given their lives.
And thousands of my fellow first responders are dying.
I'm not a conspiracy theorist.
I'm a structural engineer.
I'm a New York City correction officer.
I'm an Air Force pilot.
I'm a father who lost his son.
We're Americans, and we deserve the truth.
Go to rememberbuilding7.org today.
HempUSA.org has moved and expanded its operations for faster worldwide shipping. Our product line has grown from 5 to nearly 100 items in less than 5 years. Our food is grown naturally, always chemical-free, not found in stores. Great for daily intake and perfect for your emergency storage shelter. Call 908-691-2608 or visit HempUSA.org and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you.
More energy, stronger immune power, improved sense of well-being. How many supplements have you heard boast of these benefits? The team behind Centrition believes that supplements should over-deliver on their promises. And Centrition does just that. Centrition utilizes the ancient healing wisdom of Chinese medicine in conjunction with the science of modern nutrition. Adaptogenic herbs serve as the healing component, and organic hemp protein and greens and superfoods act as a balanced nutrient base. Plus, Centrition tastes great in just water. This powder supplement is everything you'd want in a product, and it's all natural. Visit Centrition.com to order yours or call 1-866-497-7436. After you use Centrition, you'll believe in supplements again.
You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now.
The man who stole the water will swim forevermore, but he'll never reach the
land. Hi, with Truth News Radio Australia, welcome back. We're getting into the really deep level of the questions about the validity of the theory of evolution, the political way in which the evolutionary concepts are used by elitists, by oligarchs, the connection there with Thomas Malthus and Thomas Huxley, who of course was somewhat of an oligarch. And I can certainly go along with a lot of this critique because, yes, the theory of evolution does prop up, if it's used in a certain way, the agendas of those who would control us. But that's sometimes what they call social Darwinism. And many scientists and many progressive thinkers have decried social Darwinism, which of course is tied to eugenics, and have said, well, social Darwinism is a misuse or a misapplication of Darwin's ideas. And they've argued in the post-World War II era that the core theory of evolution is a scientific principle, and it's become as accepted, I think, as probably Newton's three laws of motion. The theory of gravity, in the biological sphere, is accepted as our scientific body of knowledge. And, of course, with the development of genetics, the mechanism for natural selection has been now identified, through genetics and through this process that has been described as the blind watchmaker, which again is a metaphor that's been wrapped around the concept of Darwinian evolution, which is that by random changes you get increased complexity. Now, I'm not tied to that viewpoint myself because I know that there are alternative, scientific bases for understanding evolution, and one of them is complexity theory. And complexity theory is quite a well-established science, and it's a branch of mathematics as well, which does not rely on the concept of pure randomness. But that, again, we have to look at this this sort of scientific principle and say, well, are we throwing out all of Darwin? Are we throwing out the concept of evolution and natural selection from random mutations completely? And I know Darwin himself didn't even have a concept of random mutations because there was no science of genetics when he was around. But that is the way it is now taught in school, that random mutation allows for changing of our DNA expression and ultimately changing of species and even new genera and whole new types of animal and life plant forms through this process of random mutation. Right. Now, Craig, yeah, I'll just hand it over to you. I really would like to get into some of that, and I do want to get to the threat of nuclear catastrophe as well.
Okay. Well, Herod, the underlying assumptions or the axioms that people have are usually the problem. You know, first of all, Darwin didn't have his theory of evolution. It was actually taken from other people. Like, for example, his father, Erasmus Darwin, had already proposed a concept of common descent in his 1974 book called Zoonomia. And also, you know, Darwin's famous Tree of Life diagram was already pre-published in a book by Robert Chambers called The Vestiges of Natural History of Creation. And then you had another naturalist, Jean-Baptiste Lamarck, in 1809, in his book Philosophie Zoologique, talking about the transmutation of the species. So the problem we have is that you have to think about Darwin as being a project to push not the actual science of evolution, but a political operation. Because, look, there is an evolution that takes place on the Earth, in the universe, in fact. That's undoubtedly the case, but it's not a random, pairwise, statistical process, which is where you get into this idea of social Darwinism, because that's taken from the work of Herbert Spencer in particular. And the other problem is that a lot of people assume that Isaac Newton was correct, and he's not. His work was plagiarized by Johannes Kepler, and Kepler's discovery of the universal principles of gravitation. And that is actually the reality of the situation, that, for example, Isaac Newton's inverse square law was in fact taken from Kepler's work. But Kepler had a different view of the universe, one of intention, of the principle of intention, that the universe was not arbitrary, it wasn't a statistical, but there was actually unified principles that govern the way the universe works. And what you find when you look at the question of evolution is that the process by which we have the number of species that we have on the face of the planet today is governed by what I mentioned before, these things called physical principles. And one of the major ones there is the physical principle of life. And I've given presentations about the work of a great biogeochemist in Russia by the name of Vladimir Vernadsky, who defined the biosphere that we live into three separate phase spaces that are governed by these physical principles. The first is the abiotic or non-living. Then you have the biotic or the living, which is governed by life. And then you have a third one, which is the noetic, which is governed by the processes of creativity in the human mind. But these processes, and particularly that of life, govern the way that species develop. Now, what we've done in the LaRouche organization in particular, and if people really want to get into the nitty-gritty of this, they have to go to a website called LaRouchePack, LaRouchePac.com, and go to the basement page, because LaRouche has a grouping of some very talented young scientists that are grappling with this very question of how is it that mankind is here today. I mean, we've only been on the planet for, I don't know, maybe 100,000 years when you're talking about Earth being existing for 500 million years. And yes. What you see is that there's enormous forces within the galaxy that impinge upon the face of the planet. And life or living processes have transformed themselves over the period of this last 500 million years. And they've done so in response. What we've been determining, actually, is they've been living processes, from single-cell organisms up to the complex organisms today, have been responding to various forces within the galaxy over the course of this 500 million years. And if you look at this question of the extinction of species, you find that 99.95% of the species that have existed on this Earth have gone extinct. In fact, that's the proportion of species that have gone extinct over the course of the development of the Earth.
Okay.
But you see, so, yeah, sorry.
No, please continue, yeah.
Yeah, okay, so what you find, however, is that there's a paradox that whilst these species have gone extinct, you have seen a transformation of the types of species that have come into development today, to the point that we have man that has a very high form of existence, highly developed form of existence. I mean, we have a very high energy flux density, high metabolic rate, and so forth. Now, how did that come about? Well, it didn't come about by pairwise bumping into each other or some sort of, fighting, amongst species. It came about because of the external influences and principles that govern us. And I'll just make the point that if you look at these extinction periods, and you've had three main extinction periods over the course of the last 500 million years, and these are governed, and we've mapped them and shown them to be governed by the position that our solar system is in relation to the galaxy. Because, and when people think about evolution, they don't take into account these large astronomical cycles. Now, if you think our solar system, I should say, in our galaxy, the galaxy itself is like a spiral-armed galaxy, right? And you have two different types of cycles. One is a 60 million year cycle, and that's where our solar system bumps up and down through the plane of that galaxy. And we're right now moving into the northern region of the plane, which means we move out of the protection of being inside the plane of the galaxy. So we're actually going to be bombarded in this next 60 million year period, which is the period of the cycle, to more and more cosmic radiation and high energy type influences. So this is one cycle that we have, and it's mapped geologically because of the changes that you see in the species, in the geology of the Earth, and so forth. You also have another cycle, which is a longer cycle of 140 million years, whereby the solar system travels through the arms of the spiral galaxy, which brings us into contact to more or less cosmic radiation.
Yep.
Now, as these actually defined distinct periods whereby you have seen the extinction of huge numbers of species of plants, of animals, and so forth. But after each extinction, you see a radical change in the nature of the species that exist afterwards.
And just I can going to come break back to break. We're just going to break. Absolutely fascinating stuff. I'm just totally glued to my chair. We'll be right back.
Are you the plaintiff or defendant in a lawsuit? Win your case without an attorney with Jurisdictionary, the affordable, easy-to-understand 4-CD course that will show you how, in 24 hours, step step by step. If you have a lawyer, know what your lawyer should be doing. If you don't have a lawyer, know what you should do for yourself. Thousands have won with our step-by-step course, and now you can too. Jurisdictionary was created by a licensed attorney with 22 years of case-winning experience. Even if you're not in a lawsuit, you can learn what everyone should understand about the principles and practices that control our American courts. You'll receive our audio classroom, video seminar, tutorials, forms for civil cases, pro se tactics, and much more. Please visit ruleoflawradio.com and click on the banner or call toll-free 866-LAW-EASY.
Hey, did you hear? Ron Paul has announced he's running for president in 2012.
Who's Ron Paul?
Really? Okay, put down the cell phone for 1 minute. Your friends really don't care about your Twitter updates on what you had for breakfast.
Oh, but I love to make those little smiley faces with punctuation marks.
Of course you do. Now listen closely. You need to go down to Brave New Books and learn as much as you can about Ron Paul and his message before it's too late. They have all of his books and many of the books he talks about. They also have t-shirts, bumper stickers, and yard signs so that you can show your support for him during the campaign.
Brave New Books? Do they have Harry Potter and Twilight?
No, but they do carry a large selection of survival and preparedness books to protect your family in time of emergency.
That sounds like that show on the Discovery Channel.
Yeah, there's even a wilderness survival expert that teaches classes called Earth Skills School that you can sign up for on the website bravenewbookstore.com. What are you doing?
I'm tweeting all my friends that they should go to bravenewbookstore.com or down to the bookstore in person. Where's that located?
1904 Guadalupe Street.
There, it's sent. I even made a smiley face.
Great.
Live with Truth News Radio Australia. Welcome back to the show. And we are getting into the concept of what is really evolution. We've been going through the debunking of Darwin's evolution. And I should point out, you know, the popular impression of the people have of those who disagree with Darwin's evolution is that they must be biblical fundamentalists, because of course the Bible, you know, has a chronology. And back in the time of Darwin, of course, that biblical chronology was seen as being the main reason why Darwin's ideas were thrown out. And there were some, you know, very celebrated sort of cases against, arguments against Darwin based on the idea that the world had to be 5,000 years old based on the Bible. Now, of course, you don't subscribe to that view, do you, Craig? And let's just you know, make this clear so everyone understands where you're coming from. I mean, where do you stand in relation to biblical chronology?
Well, the biblical chronology hasn't got anything to do with anything. I mean, the only reality of the theological view is that human beings are created with this ability of creativity. So the universe is creative. The Christian God is creative, and human beings are created because we're made in his image. That's the theological idea of what it means to what that's the relevance of the Bible. Any sort of time frames within the Bible is absurd, and it's a simplistic reductionist version of what are very, you know, complicated, and we don't understand hardly anything about how the universe works, and to reduce it down to a 6,000-year time frame is absurd in the extreme.
When we hear the history of the critiques of Darwin's theory, the famous, you know, Archbishop Usher, I believe his name was, who said that, you know, the world began at 9 a.m. on such and such a day 5,000 years ago, it makes us laugh at those people in those times, and then we laugh then at anyone who questions Darwin because we lump them all together with that type of viewpoint. Would you agree with that?
Yes, that's right. But the problem is that people aren't aware of the actual third, an actual more truthful way of looking at the universe, that the universe is governed by principles, and that there is a process of not more randomness or winding down as the views of the second thought of thermodynamics, which tends to govern everything today. But in fact, the universe is developing more and more to higher and higher forms of existence. And as I was talking to before the break, you've had these mass extinction periods, there's three major ones that coincide with these huge cycles, astronomical cycles, where our solar system moves through the galaxy. But what you see is that after each extinction cycle, whilst you have the extinction of large numbers of genera, you also have, coming out of that, the formation of even more species of higher forms of genera, more families of genera. And you should, and this has been mapped as some of the research has been done archaeologically, that the diversity in the number of genera gets bigger and bigger. So you end up with more biodiversity after extinction events, which is a real paradox. But as a measure of the degree of increase of energy in terms of the development of the universe and of our biosphere, apart from the development of the diversity, the increased diversity, biodiversity of the genera, you have specific characteristics that happen or increase after each of these extinction phases. Like, for example, motility. What you see is that, you know, you might have a sponge on the bottom of the ocean, and that type of creature going back 500 million years ago. But today we've got, you know, animal forms walking around on land. And yeah, after each specific extinction phase, the KT, you know, the dinosaur one being the last one, you saw the development more of mammals, right? So you saw that sort of increase in energy coming from the way that the universe responds to the cause of these extinction events. Another example is what we call the development of buffered versus unbuffered species. Like, this is the dependency that you have of species on their environment. At one point, you could only have species that existed in the sea, right? But as evolution has taken place in response to all these other principles and forces, you've got animals that now are walking around on land that aren't as defined by their environment as, say, something can only live in the sea. And the final thing, as an example of the increase in the energy, not the winding down, as the second, third law of thermodynamics says, is the increase of predators. As you have higher forms of life that are more complex, like human beings, you find that the number of predators, that is animals that feed off other animals, actually increases. And there's certain jumps that take place after each extinction event. So whilst one could say this looks random, the fact is that there are governing principles in the universe that may give the appearance to the naive senses of being random, but there's in fact governing principles that are unseen that are huge, and they're governing the entire process of development of the universe. So what you see is the universe is not winding down, it's not dying a heat death, but in fact becoming more complex, more energy dense, more energy efficient in some cases in terms of animals. It's completely different to this idea that is being propagated by those that take an oligarchical view of man to say, oh no, man's polluting the earth, man's shutting things down, you know, species are going out of existence. Well, the point is, species, 99.5% of species go out of existence, not because of man's effort, but because it's the nature of way the universe works. Now, man can accelerate that if we do stupid things like, you know, pollute environments and so on and so forth. We ourselves, unfortunately, are facing a real extinction threat today if we allow this insanity of nuclear war through the exchange of nuclear bombs between, say, Russia and America to take place in the near future because of some political idea that, called the oligarchical principle.
Now, there's just a point I find really interesting, Craig, with this concept of this oligarchical principle. These people who consider themselves to be ruling elites, I mean, in reality, who are these people? I mean, there's a certain view that says that there are secret societies or secret lineages that go back thousands of years, and I'm sure that possibly, you know, I don't know, to be honest with you. I think it's possible, but I also know that a lot of these people are just by chance, or, you know, by combination of ruthlessness and luck, these certain people have become very rich and very powerful, and then they adopt the mindset of being a part of the ruling elite. And but then when we say, well, the ruling elite has this idea that we're all just animals, we're all just cattle, and it's all just random mechanical universe, and that they're somehow managing it. But how do they see themselves? Because they themselves can't see themselves as purely random. Otherwise, they wouldn't be able to have that oligarchical principle in their mind. But then that takes us back to the idea, is there some kind of secret ruling lineage, which I personally don't really, you know, believe. But I just wonder, what is your take on that?
Well, you have to look at the principle of empire, Hereward, first and foremost. And the British Empire today still exists. It exists in the form of a monetarist system, where the financial monetarist system is, in a sense, the oligarchy. It's centred in the City of London and in Wall Street. But specifically, we're talking about the Crown itself, the Queen, Prince Philip, and the associated families with the Crown and other crowns around the world, right? That's specifically what we're talking about here. This is not there's a very interesting report come out yesterday from overseas, which is a bit shocking to many people, whereby the Queen's own bank, Coutts Bank, has now been fined $8.7 million for drug money laundering. Now, we have been, the LaRouche organization published a book in the 1980s called Dope Incorporated, where we showed that the British royal family, the Crown in particular, has been involved in the drug trade for centuries. It's okay. Part and parcel of what the Crown is involved in. So, look, just to make the point even more clearer, there's a series of empires that have taken place on the face of this planet. The British Empire is the last of them, right? You've had the Babylonian Empire that sort of merged and morphed into the Roman Empire. Then you've had the Venetian-type empires and so forth. But these are not masses of people. They're usually a few hundred ruling families that exercise the power, usually through the monetary system. All empires are based upon monetary systems. And this is where the power was broken in the American Republic under Benjamin Franklin, is because they established a new type of monetary system based upon national banking, not central banking, in this monetary system, which actually creates the power of the money is invested in the power of the sovereign nation state. So this is a big topic in and of itself, the difference between nation states and empires. But this is people don't get a clear sense of what an empire is. I think they did 200 years ago when it was, you know, gunboats and slave trading and things like that, which was run through the British East India Company.
Just another quick question, Craig, because we're about to run out of time.
Yep.
Is it possible, you're talking about intentionality and you're talking about a guiding, you know, that the universe is not random, there is intentionality. Now, is it possible that there is an intentionality in the universe that eventually we, the awakened consciousness, I guess, the awakened consciousness of the creative man, the creative potential of humanity, is now going to sweep aside this archaic vestige of this oligarchical, despotic model that sort of goes back, I guess, thousands of years to the origins of civilization, that it is part of the creative principle that we now sweep that aside? And we're going to be winding up very shortly, so maybe you want to just finish up with that.
Quickly, we need to. We have to get rid of empires if mankind is to survive, because if we allow empires to govern the future destiny of mankind, we're going to face thermonuclear extinction, because the oligarchy will destroy itself as opposed to give any power to the idea of a true republic. And you only have to see that in terms of the whole Gods of Olympus, Zeus and Prometheus story.
Okay, well, I mean, I give my vote to that. It's a big thing to get your head around, and it's going to take a lot of study for me to even, you know exactly what I think on all the things you've brought up today. But it's fascinating, and I just thank you so much for coming on today.
You're most welcome, Harold. Any time. I like it. There's many, many topics that we've covered today.
Wind it up. Sorry, Craig. We're just out of time. We'll be back next week.
Bibles for America is offering absolutely free a unique study Bible called the New Testament Recovery Version. The New Testament Recovery Version has over 9,000 footnotes that explain what the Bible says verse by verse, helping you to know God and to know the meaning of life. Order your free copy today from Bibles for America. Call us toll-free at 888-551-0102 or visit us online at bfa.org. This translation is highly accurate, and it comes with over 13,000 cross-references, plus charts and maps and an outline for every book of the Bible. This is truly a Bible you can understand. To get your free copy of the New Testament Recovery Version, call us toll-free at 888-551-0102. That's 888-551-0102. Or visit us online at bfa.org.